Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. They make suits, shirts, coats, and more. And everything is made to your exact measurement for a great fit. Plus, you get to personalize all the details, including your lapel, lining, and your own monogram. They have tons of things to choose from. You want a pink suit? You can get a pink suit. And speaking of pink suits, RJ Barrett's brand new collection with Indochino just dropped. Featuring limited edition fabrics and jacket linings RJ helped pick out and design. Indochino's process is simple. Choose your fabric, pick your customizations, and submit your measurements. Your package will be delivered straight to your door in 2 weeks. You can get measured and design your suit at your nearest Indochino showroom, or you can do it yourself online at Indochino.com. Right now, you can get $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Blue Wire at checkout. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code Blue Wire, for $30 off your total purchase of $390 or more. Incredible deal for made-to-measure clothing. You really have no excuse anymore to wear clothing that doesn't fit. What it do? Hardwood Knox listeners, I am Dan Favalu, coming at you without my co-host Andrew D. Bailey this time. I am, however, pleased to be joined by friend slash colleague slash Bleacher Report national NBA columnist Grant Hughes. Follow him on Twitter at @GT_Hughes. Again, that's @GT_Hughes. Low volume tweeter, but high efficiency, so I highly recommend following him. We're going to reassess the best and worst contracts from free agency this past summer. It's a nice time to do it since the regular season's at the quarter pole. We decided to break this up into two parts, though, since we went so long on the first one. So I'll have him back on in the coming days to go through the worst contracts from the summer in hindsight, now that we've seen some samples beneath them, which means that we are starting with the best contracts from 2019 free agency. This was fun. We both approached it from sort of different angles, and so we came up with a lot of different players. There were some really good variants, so I think you'll enjoy this listen. Again, it'll be the best contracts, re-ranking, reassessing the best contracts from the 2019 offseason. Before we get started, though, our usual housekeeping notes. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review Hardwood Knox on iTunes. We really appreciate it when we see those numbers go up. If you want to find us somewhere else, we can be found wherever else you're consuming your podcast. It is still really awesome and helps us get found, helps people find it, just helps us in general if you go to iTunes and rate us, review us anyway. Certainly subscribe if you haven't done so. If you have done those things, we please ask that you then recommend us to somebody by word of mouth, shout us out on Twitter, or the promotions that Andy and I throw out on Twitter as well. Also subscribe to us on YouTube. We're up there too. There are apparently people that listen to podcasts on YouTube, and our viewership has been increasing. So shout out to everyone that uses YouTube to get podcasts. Just search Hardwood Knox in YouTube, or it's youtube.com/Hardwood Knox. Follow us on Twitter as well at Hardwood Knox. You can follow Andy on Twitter at Andrew D. Bailey. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Favalle, Favale. You can follow the Blue Wire Pods on Twitter as well, at Blue Wire Pods. I am running that account over there, so you know that you're going to get some fire slash terribly structured tweets, and then you'll also be able to check out some promotions from the many other podcasts that Blue Wire has to offer. Last but certainly not least, shout out to our sponsors this week, Indochino, the pre-roll you just heard for them, and also ShipStation and Harry's. Holidays are coming. Use these promo codes that we're offering you in each ad read. But shout out to all those companies for helping us out at Hardwood Knox. Without further ado, let's get right into re-ranking slash reassessing the best contracts, i.e. most team-friendly contracts from 2019 NBA free agency with Bleacher Report's Grant Hughes. Welcome, everyone. I am talking to friend, colleague at Bleacher Report, and low-volume, high-efficiency tweeter, Grant Hughes. How are you doing today, Grant?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to talk about some money. Because actually, you know, it was interesting when you approached me about this. This season, the stuff I've been working on just hasn't lent itself to talking as much about contracts and team-building stuff. It's been, you know, more just other areas of the game. So it was really cool to go back through this and try to remember what I thought when a lot of these deals got signed over the summer and see how many I sort of have switched opinions on and sort of see where we are. Although granted, I'm sure you'll agree, we're still early on a lot of this stuff, but we've seen, you know, a fair amount of how these teams look to get a better idea of what, you know, who kind of spent their money wisely and who didn't.
Yeah. I mean, look, it is still early, but we're also at the quarter poll basically.
Yeah.
And so like, this is when stuff starts to become fact. And it's interesting you mentioned this because I was seeing trade scenarios and free agency scenarios and cap numbers in my sleep last season. And this season it's been refreshing, I think, to like sort of focus more on the game, and there seems to be more time for nuance and to focus on the performances. It also, though, as someone who loves like the trades and the free agency and the contract aspects of the game, it makes doing this stuff even more fun because it's slightly more of a rarity this season. And so like, I don't mind talking about, you know, I'm sure we'll do a trade podcast to celebrate like the start of quote unquote trade season. But like, we were talking about trades and free agency so much last year that this has been refreshing to, as Mike Prada put it at SB Nation, to get back to the basketball.
Yeah, I think too, though, it's beneficial because, you know, focusing more on sort of the team dynamics and how fit works and who's playing well with whom and what these teams need on the floor and what, you know, where their holes are, it really has informed a lot of my thinking on these. And I think that'll come through where, you know, it's not just for example, you know, Al Horford 4 for 109. It's not just that, you know, for me, where maybe in the past it would have been, it's, well, what, you know, 4 for 109 is different for this player on this team than it would be for, you know, player X on team Y. So I think taking more of a holistic approach, looking at the money and looking at the fit and all that stuff, I think it makes for a little bit better analysis. Although I guess we'll let your audience be the judge of that.
Well, I like that we approach this like in two different ways. So I think that will make for a more well-rounded approach. And then sort of just as a reminder, I excluded rookie extensions and rookie scale contracts or the contracts of anyone who was drafted in the second round. Undrafted rookies were fair game. I don't know if you had any exclusions. And I also approached this, and I think you probably did too, just you kind of mentioned it about the team fit. These contracts are, I think specifically for the worst ones, it's which contracts are the least team friendly in our eyes, basically.
Yeah.
And so I'm happy. Every player should get paid. If the money's available, take it. This is not a criticism saying they don't deserve the money. It's more of a criticism of the team when we get into that. Or even with best contracts, that's probably just an admission, hey, this player should be getting paid more because it's so friendly to the team.
Yeah, definitely for me, it was a team-based approach. And I actually thought I was going to do rookie extensions and rookie deals and stuff, but ultimately, I just kind of decided not to, because when I go look at, say, Ben Simmons or Jamal Murray or even DeJounte Murray, it just felt too early. And all these guys are so young that, you know, there's just a lot, you know, although I do have fairly strong opinions on, say, Simmons, for example, and that maybe not being a great deal. I didn't feel comfortable kind of lumping them in with, you know, your true free agent signing guys. So that's kind of where my list focused.
The real quick question, which max extension are you more comfortable with at this point, Murray's or Simmons's? Or is that not even a question at this point?
So, you know, it's going to sound sort of contradictory, but I think I like Simmons better. Although I totally acknowledge like his offensive regression is a huge problem. I don't think he'll ever be able to shoot. We're getting all this all defense first team stuff, which I think is partly PR, but partly maybe justified. But I think like Simmons, almost regardless, was going to get that money somewhere. And if your thinking on the Sixers is you can't keep him and Embiid together forever, it just will never work, I think it maybe makes him easier to trade than it would be if, you know, you're trying to move him and there was the potential of him leaving his acquiring team. It's too much money for the player that he is right now. But I think when you sort of consider all of that together, and really looking at it from a trade perspective, I like it a little more. Murray's just too, he's young. He's really not any better than he was last year. And I'm not sure he's a second star on a contender yet, but I don't know. I guess I just feel more confident that there's value to be had from Simmons' deal that might not be the case with Murray's. But again, you know, that's why I left these guys out. I don't have, you know, a super clear picture on either of them.
I agree with everything you said, though. I do think it's more of a debate than I would have imagined initially a year ago, or even after the contracts were signed.
Yeah.
So do you want to start with best or worst deals?
So the way I did it, let's start with best. And for me, these are just, you know, I didn't rank them at all. They're just, as I was going through all the signings, the ones that sort of stuck out as, hey, I like that deal. And I think maybe we should start with, you know, the big numbers. So I had a few that were over 100 million that I liked total value. And, you know, I guess I wouldn't include, we're assuming player options get picked up or whatever, because some of these would drop it below. But to me, the best just sort of has to be Kawhi. And that's 3 for 103. He's got a player option in the last year. And again, like, you know, you could look at some of his numbers and they're actually down a little bit, save for, you know, his distribution's been better. I think if watching him, you could make the case that defensively he's not what he was, which means he's gone from like maybe the greatest perimeter defender ever to one of the greatest ever. But, you know, just thinking of what that signing meant to the Clippers, how it, you know, was really the first truly transformational step for the franchise, how it's connected to getting Paul George, how it's part of a bigger plan that has made them into just a top tier team, a top tier organization. And maybe he's the best player in the league when you need to win a playoff series, which he was last year. So yeah, 3 for 103. I just don't know how else you can, you know, how you could possibly term that a bad deal. And I'd say the player option on year three, like, I guess that was, you could spin that as a negative, but like, how sure are you that Kawhi Leonard will be this good for 3 years versus two? It might be a blessing that, like, you know, maybe the knee acts up, maybe the quad acts up, and you're kind of cool with him opting out and trying to get one more big deal somewhere else. I don't know. I don't think that player option is necessarily a huge negative.
No, look, the quad injury that he has might be this, like, degenerative thing, or just right. Knee in general. And so that's huge. I would agree with you there. I did mine in tiers. And so my tier one would just be like the friggin' steals for teams. And so I put Kawhi in that tier. I don't have anything to add to you said, to what you said. His 3-point efficiency is down. Like you said, some of his other numbers, he's still thermonuclear from the mid range. And like you said, the passing, I mean, his previous career high in pick and roll possessions per game were 6.3. And that was with the Raptors. He's up to 9.3 pick and roll ball handler possessions this season. Maybe that continues to drop because Paul George is back, but everyone's sort of been waiting for the Kevin Durant like assist number leap from Leonard, and now he's just done it. And so that's going to go down as one of the best free agency signings in NBA history.
Yeah, I think it has to. And like, you know, look, we're talking about, he's at 34.7% usage, which is just like, it's a career high, I'm pretty sure. I just looked it up a moment ago. And his true shooting is at 53.6%, which, you know, league average tends to be, I think this year, it's just a hair under 56. So it's not like he's really struggling. And I think his track record from three suggests that, you know, there's going to be major positive regression. So even if this player was the guy that they signed, and I don't think it is, I think he'll be better. Yeah, it's still just, it's a transformative signing. It's a huge deal. You know, he's a bargain at, you know, 1.5x the price, I'd say, probably.
Who else did you have in your 9-figure tier, I guess, basically?
Yeah. So I'm really surprised that I came around on this, and it may be some recency bias, but I actually like Jimmy Butler at 4 for 141.
Ooh.
And so here's the thinking on that. And we're talking about fit again, his particular fit, not just sort of like ideologically with the Heat, who, you know, if there's a franchise that's cool with guys working out at 3:30 in the morning, it's definitely them. So like personality wise, that's a fit. Where I don't know that it was the case in any of his three previous stops, which all ended, you know, somewhere between badly and, you know, kind of messily. So that's looming, right? Like, you've got a guy on the long-term deal into his 30s now for a lot of money. You worry about that. You worry about decline. But like, this is a Heat team that has a whole mess of guys that are really, really good at like one or two things, but they all have flaws. And Butler is the guy, you know, you look at the game against Toronto where triple double, scored the first 8 points of overtime, just straight up ended the game. And that's the guy that a team like that needs, where there's no question about who's in charge. He can do basically a little bit of everything very well. He's a bucket when you need it. He'll guard the other team's best player when you need it. And he fills in all these gaps that these otherwise, you know, 1 to 2 dimensional Heat players leave open. And that I think right now the Heat are sort of as good as a team can be with one superstar. And I don't know if Butler's a top 10 guy, but the fit is just so good. And the way that he addresses what they need works so well that at least right now, you know, and again, he's going to age, into his 30s on this deal. But at least right now, I really like just all of the synergy between player and team.
I've also kind of thought that the Heat have outperformed just offensively a little bit, and I wasn't sure whether it's sustainable. I mean, you could even make the case that they've outperformed expectations on the defensive end as well, but because Butler's been so deferential on that end this year and seems to just be making the sacrifices that he maybe wasn't at his other stops, maybe that's just a harbinger that this will continue. I mean, there are still just things that concern me. Like, he's shooting 25% on pull-up jumpers inside the arc, but he gives this team a closer, and you have to believe that his three-point percentage will come up at least a little bit. That'll be a little bit more efficient as the season goes on.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, again, I'm surprised that I ended up putting him here, just because really for most of his career, I was sort of down on the total package of Butler as like a true superstar. And I still, like, again, I don't know that he is one, but he's kind of the right star for this team, I think, is probably the best way I can put it. Whether that's worth, you know, $141 million or, you know, slightly less than that guaranteed with the player option on the last year is maybe an open question, but so far so good, I guess.
Ooh, buddy, believe it or not, it's that time of year again. The holiday rush is coming, Hardwood Knox listeners, and if you sell stuff online, you better get ready with ShipStation. With more people buying online than ever before, you have to be able to ship orders out quickly, efficiently, and affordably. But how do you keep track of all those orders? Or decide which shipping carrier to use? Or if you're getting the best rates? Luckily, ShipStation can help. With just a few clicks, you'll be managing orders, printing labels, and getting those products out the door and delivered in time for the holidays. No matter where you're selling, Amazon, Etsy, your own website, ShipStation brings all your orders into one simple interface, making them really easy to manage from any device, even your cell phone. ShipStation works with all of the major carriers, including USPS, FedEx, and UPS. I can attest to the latter because my wife and my father-in-law co-own a couple of UPS stores together. They use ShipStation all the time for their own personal stuff. Her brother sells sneakers online. They use that all the time. They also deal with ShipStation a lot, and they've talked about how good it is. ShipStation even offers big discounts on shipping costs. Now any business can access the same postage discounts that are usually reserved for large Fortune 500 companies. You'll always know that you're getting the best deal. No wonder ShipStation is the number one choice of online sellers. You'll ship more in less time with the best rates available. Take the hassle out of your holiday shipping this year. Let ShipStation help you handle it all with ease. Just use Hardwood Knox's offer code BLUE to get a 60-day free trial. That's 2 months free of no-hassle, stress-free holiday shipping. Just visit ShipStation.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and type in BLUE. That's ShipStation.com, enter offer code BLUE. ShipStation, make ship happen. Looking for a great gift for that special someone in your life? Harry's is a gift that's both thoughtful and practical. Listeners of Hardwood Knox can get $5 off any Harry's shave set by heading to harrys.com/bluewire. Free shipping ends on December 16th, so act now. Here's why Harry's makes a perfect gift for that special guy in your life. It's a great deal for you and for him. Holiday sets start at just $20. That's within Secret Santa limits. Harry's blade refills are also as low as $2 each, so your guy will save money over time. It comes ready to gift in a handsome holiday gift box as well. Your gift even gives back. 1% of each sale will be donated to charitable organizations. As a special offer for listeners of Hardwood Knox, we've partnered with Harry's to give you $5 off any shave set, including their limited edition holiday sets, when you go to harrys.com/bluewire. On top of that, again, you will get free shipping. Each Harry's shaving set comes with a weighted handle that also has the option to engrave, 5-blade razor cartridges, foaming shave gel for a rich lather, a travel cover to protect your blade, and it's packaged in a handsome holiday gift box. Free shipping ends on December 16th, so act now. Just go to harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire. My second member of Tier 1, I have three members in there. Butler was not one of them, but I have Rashawn Holmes, which is, it's just ironic that the Kings signed Rashawn Holmes and Dwayne Dedmon in the same offseason, just completely two separate ends of the contract spectrum right now. 2 years, $9.8 million for Rashawn Holmes, and he's just been, since entering the starting lineup for them, he's just been out of his mind. 70.2% true shooting. I know most of his baskets come off assists, but he has a jump hook to his game, and he was shooting around 50% on all jumpers in general. he's just been absolutely outstanding for them. And he's relative to what they have. He's definitely an asset to them on the defensive end, a fairly good rim protector, and teams are, or team opposing offenses aren't as efficient in the half court when he's on the floor. So it's been a fantastic season for him. He was good already, but I'm really hoping that whether it happens in Sacramento this season or next season, I want to see him empowered to shoot more threes again, because he had that year in Philly, I think it was 17-18, where he really showed some range. And if you can get to a point where he's allowing you to sport those five out lineups, then it sort of mitigates what you might have lost in Dwayne Dedmon's apparent regression right now.
Yeah, Holmes is definitely one of the very first guys I put in my sort of under $100 million tier, and obviously he's way under that. I mean, anytime, you know, the center market is devalued just because the game has changed, but, you know, he's a starting caliber center that you're paying $5 million a year, and you're getting, I think what's most interesting to me is that if you look at his per 36 numbers, like, he's had slightly different roles in previous stops, but so per 36 this year, 15.9 points, 10.7 boards, 1.8 blocks, they're basically like right in line with what he's done for his whole career. Obviously, because he's finishing so many lobs, his field goal percentage is way above. It's like almost 67% overall this year. It's way above where it's been, but he's kind of the same guy. He's making his free throws. He's a vertical stretcher. He's fine defensively, I think. He's active. He's an energetic rebounder. And really, like, if you look at in conjunction with, you know, Dedmon, who I thought would have been, if you'd polled me before the season, he would have been the center contract I like most on the Kings. He's underperformed. Bagley's been hurt. Giles is basically washed out. He's not going to be, he may not be in the league after this year. He won't be on the Kings, that's for certain. And I mean, basically, Holmes has been the guy in the middle. And without, you know, the Kings started 0-5, but, you know, you look at where they kind of pick things up, it definitely does line up with Holmes becoming a starter too. So in terms of what he's meant to the team, independent of the bargain that he represents, it's another really strong argument in favor of him being one of the best deals of the summer.
Who's your next guy?
I got a couple more. I mean, I think I lumped Horford and Kemba together, basically. Just sort of going, you know, Horford obviously is a little bit less than Kemba, I think, who got 141 or right around there, and Horford's 109 with the fourth year partially guaranteed. It's the same, you know, we're beating the same drum of these are the adults in the room that both of these teams need. Horford's stretch is vital to a team that's going to play Simmons and Embiid, you know, two big guys that basically are better around the bucket. Kemba is kind of a lot of Kyrie Irving with none of the nonsense, and kind of is just a guy that fits better, who does a lot of the same things. And in fact, I kind of like his just, I'm shooting every pull-up three that you give me around a screen. It's just sort of it simplifies the offense. You know, that's going to kind of be option one a lot of the time, whereas Irving would yo-yo the ball a little bit and do other stuff and kind of freeze guys out. So they're kind of a piece to me, Horford and Walker. Both are a little older than you'd like to sign to you know, nine-figure deals. Both are going to regress. I guess decline is a better word. But for a couple teams that kind of fancy themselves contenders, maybe the Sixers more so, they make a lot of sense, and I think they're worth the cost, albeit, you know, high ones in both cases.
They made my list too. Kemba was in tier two, which was basically just like super team-friendly deals. And then tier three was good to borderline great value, and Horford was in tier three. For Kemba, I like what you really touched upon with the Kyrie stuff, because if you look, like, get super nitty gritty, Kemba Walker's like not really, he's controlling the ball for longer than Kyrie Irving did last year, and he's using more dribbles per possession than Kyrie last year, but he's also burning through fewer front court touches overall. He finishes off screens more frequently, and he's operating in isolation much less. And so I'm of the mind that every little bit helps, and just that sort of slight deviation of ball dominance, I guess you could call it, that helps out everyone around him, whether it's going to be Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, who's been a little up and down last year but seems to be perking up right now. I think those subtle differences end up being huge for them, and he's still the guy that can get you the tough bucket on a ridiculously difficult shot.
Yeah, I think, you know, and those are my last two like high dollar guys. But just to continue with Kemba, I just think there's a value to, especially in the wake of really the Celtics never knowing what version of Kyrie was going to kind of be around. I think there's such value in just knowing what you're going to get from a guy. And especially if that guy is, you know, your top option, which, you know, Tatum may be that someday, but he's not now. It's just a total professional, like everybody, you know, Kemba might be the most, you know, highly regarded guy in the league. You know, Horford also probably is in the running for that, but it's just such a contrast. And I don't know what that's worth in dollars, but I think it matters. And certainly, like, look, the Celtics are better, you know, that I think just top to bottom. And I don't know that people necessarily expected that. I think maybe this was looked at from Kyrie to Kemba as a downgrade by maybe more casual fans or ones that don't sort of hold the, like, I don't know, I guess I'm an anti-Kyrie guy probably if you had to put a label on it, but I just think, you know, there's value in a guy that is just going to be a pro and you know, give you something you can count on all the time. And Kemba definitely is that.
This was actually ended up being a nice transition. So I had Kemba in tier two, and my only tier ones were Kawhi and Rashawn Holmes. Also in tier two for me, since I'll move on from the overlap, was JJ Redick. 2 years and $26.5 million. I always liked the deal. I never thought I'd be this high on it, but it's not an overstatement just to say that his game is timeless. He's shooting almost 46% from three. The only player in NBA history who has matched what he's shooting from three while taking at least the same number of three-point attempts per 36 minutes is Stephen Curry in 2015-2016. And it's not even like this is Stephen Curry on multiple seasons. It's just that Stephen Curry season, which is all the more impressive. The thing that I don't think people realize enough, they've seen that he can kind of score off the dribble a little bit more in recent years, but this is the third consecutive year in which he's rated in the 86th percentile or better of pick and roll efficiency as the ball handler. It's never been this substantial part of his game. And I know Philly didn't run a ton of pick and roll to begin with, but they've always accounted for at least 10% of his plays during that time. And I think that that's absolutely huge. And so just the safety valve he gives you on the offensive end now is absolutely incredible. And I don't think we've seen like an in-depth analysis of why he ended up in New Orleans or what other offers were out there, but I'd be hard pressed to believe that there weren't slightly more lucrative contracts on the table, because he's just somebody who fits literally anywhere. And if the Pelicans like don't come close to the playoff picture, I don't know that they would move him leading into the trade deadline, but I'd be interested to see what type of offers for him would be on the table.
Yeah. And like, so I think for me, another guy that I have in a very similar tier to Redick, and that you could say almost all of the same things about, except for being able to dribble at all, is Danny Green. And the Lakers signed him 2 for $30. And like, to me, it's just, he is what he is. He has serious limitations, but he's also a guy that you definitely know is going to take every big shot you need in a title pursuit, because he's done it for more than one team. His 3-point shooting's a little down this year, but I mean, he shot like 45.5%, I think, last season. So, you know, 38.5 right now is fine. And though I think he's regressed a little defensively, which, you know, just happens when you're over 30, he's still someone that certainly, you know, he's never going to be targeted, like not to pick on Redick, because I agree that's a great signing. But Green is still someone that you're more likely to put on the opponent's best offensive player than the best offensive player is going to hunt him down and try to score on him. And for a Lakers team that just, you know, it's built around LeBron and Davis, and you got to have defenders and shooters, Green has always been that guy that just sort of, you know who this contender needs? So, you know, 3-and-D wing. It's just Danny Green. Like, he's always the first guy. And I think, you know, 15 mil a year, that's quality starter money. And I think Green is better than that, especially for a Lakers team that, you know, has big designs on a title.
Yeah, I considered him too. He ultimately didn't make my list, but you made the strong case there. I kind of thought that he might score a little bit more this year, or that maybe he would play a little bit more. And he's at around 25 minutes a game. So that was something that factored in. My next person, though, to wrap up my tier two is Terrence Davis.
Yeah.
2 years, $2.4 million with the Raptors. And he has just been, his ball pressure on defense has been pretty good. He is an insane rebounder for his size. Among everyone who's 6'4 or shorter in the league right now, he has the seventh highest defensive rebounding rate. So the guys in front of him are Josh Okogie, Patrick Beverley, Royce O'Neal, Kemp Bazemore, a little surprisingly, Russell Westbrook, of course, and then DeJounte Murray. So he's been good there. And then he's just this was a team that I think on paper, and you could still even say this, they don't look like the best floor spacing squad, but he's just given them that consistent shooter from beyond the arc. He's hitting basically a trillion percent of his shots off catch and shoot. It's really 42.9% from beyond the arc. And then he's even shown that he can hit some pull-up threes. He's only taken, I think, like 15 this year. I can't remember what the exact number is, but he's over 40% on pull-up threes. And he's taken 12. So he's 5 of 12. But again, this is someone who's supposed to be that low usage guy. He can finish at the rim. He's athletic. That they have him. It's only a two-year deal, but then you have his early bird rights as he's a restricted free agent. And the fact that it's non-guaranteed for next year, so you're not dealing with a player option here. You know that you have him under team control for two seasons, and that's pretty big because he's making peanuts. Again, 2 years and $2.4 million.
Yeah, my first thought on him was, well, how does this guy go undrafted? And looking into it, it's basically because he believed in himself more than the teams that reached out. Like, I think the thinking was, we'll sign him to a two-way or a G League deal or whatever. And he's like, screw it, I'll go to Summer League and nice. I know I'm good. And he ended up on the Raptors. And you just watching him, the Raptors are one of the teams I've watched most this year. And, you know, you see him from the second he steps on the floor, you're like, well, that's an NBA body, number one. And number two, he's super aggressive and super confident, which I guess you'd have to be to just turn down, you know, the chance to be drafted because you know that you're going to make it somewhere and get a guaranteed deal. The guys like that should not be that easy to find, but it's just crazy that this is why the Raptors are a great organization, right? They just do this. I mean, you know, Van Vliet is another case. You know, they reclaim guys. Rondae Hollis Jefferson, I think, was maybe on the verge of being out of the league, and he's contributing off the bench for them on a minimum. So they just find guys. And Davis, I agree with you, is definitely one of the best. I have another. So we're into my kind of mid to low tier contract signings that I still liked. And I'm going to go back to the Celtics and Daniel Theis for 2 for $10, basically.
That's a good one, yeah.
My vision of him previously was, you know, he's undersized at the five. He stretches the floor a little bit, but that's not it at all this year. He's basically been one of the best defensive centers in the league. He leads in defensive player impact plus minus, which it's early, but I mean, that's something for $5 million.
Yeah.
And like, you know, centers, again, they're devalued. But if you, same thing with Holmes, you start for a team, and look, this is even bigger for the Celtics because they're going to win 50 plus, whatever. Which isn't the case for the Kings. If you're a starting caliber piece on a team that's that good and you're making $5 million a year with the second year partially guaranteed, that's a very team-friendly deal. And I don't think anyone saw this coming, but he's been quietly a really big piece of a good defense, and he's been the best center on a team that, you know, really coming into the year that appeared to be a weakness for them.
Yeah, the urgency was that, Boston's going to need to eventually acquire a big, and that may be true, but the urgency is definitely diminished because of what he's been able to do. Not shooting well from three, that's supposed to be part of his appeal, but he is kind of harder to play off the floor than a lot of other bigs because he has some switch to him on the perimeter. In addition to being, you know, good defensive rebounder, he's a quality rim protector. He just seems really smart on the defensive end, and I think he's a huge reason why the defense has not dropped off at all since Gordon Hayward's absence, but we've seen the offense suffer a little bit. So it's surprising that defense has almost been Boston's identity, and he's a monster part of that. That's a really good pick.
Yeah, 7.3 points per 100 better on defense with him on the floor, which those numbers can change like crazy this early. But I mean, it definitely aligns with what you're talking about in terms of the eye test, like what he physically is doing out on the floor. Do you have another, what are we in, your tier three right now?
Yeah, so moving into tier three, so we had the one overlap already. I have Al Horford's deal, which is, look, you laid out the contract itself, and it's a lot of money, but he's given the Sixers a pathway to winning the Joel Embiid-less minutes. And that's what killed them last year in the playoffs. It's what hurt them in the regular season, even after the Jimmy Butler trade a little bit. And there's still sort of some red flags when Simmons plays without both Horford and Embiid. You're kind of like, if this guy's supposed to be this good, why can't those lineups be a decided plus? They're not right now, but the Horford without Embiid lineups are. And that's the only thing I just have to add to what you already said about him, is this is just, he's a steady guy. Maybe you want his shooting numbers to come up a little bit, but the fact that now Joel Embiid is still kind of your lifeline, he hasn't played up to snuff this year, I don't think overall, But now that you have someone who can help you navigate those Embiid minutes, it's just, it's absolutely huge. And it lends some credence to the notion that, hey, Philly's underwhelming right now, but maybe they're a team that's just better built for the playoffs.
Yeah, no, that's the best point about the Horford signing. I wish I'd made it. Like, you know, I won't get the numbers right because I don't have them in front of me, but in that Toronto series last year, I'm pretty sure they just smoked the Raptors whenever Embiid was on the floor. And then they lost the series because they just got destroyed in the minutes he wasn't. So, I mean, if there was a single need in the league that that could impact the title race, it probably was the non-Embiid minutes in Philly. And like you say, Horford really is the guy to fill that hole.
Yeah, I think they were something like, this is raw plus minus, but it was like almost a minus 100 in under like 40 minutes or 50 minutes of Embiid not being on the floor. And now you compare that to just this season, Horford's played 790 possessions without Embiid, and the Sixers' net rating during that time is a plus 5.6.
Yeah, good enough, right? That's all you need.
Yeah. And so my actual new guy to add to this, Jake Layman, is made my tier three. I wanted to put him a little bit higher, but he's dealing with – he hasn't played. I think now he's missed seven or eight games in total, but he's dealing with a left toe injury. He's still just providing monster bang for his buck. The seven games before he went down, 12.1 points on 59.2% true shooting. This is the first year. He's always taken the right kinds of threes, but this is the first year he's shooting better than 35% from beyond the arc, and he's finding nylon on nearly 40% of his standstill triples. He's always just moving on the offensive end, and I think that really opens things up for Minnesota in general. The thing that's really worth monitoring, though, is that Minnesota's playing him at the four more than Portland did, and he's just better defensively there because he's like, he has some vertical pop to him, but he's not this guy that has a lot of side-to-side mobility, and him defending wings can get tough. And when they're, now that they're playing him on the four, he's just a little bit more of an asset. He can still get overpowered by like the burlier bigs, but he's a pretty good rim protector again because he has that good verticality. Opponents are shooting 47.5% against him at the rim, a top 16 mark among 142 players who are contesting at least as many shots as him. And regardless of whether he's played with Karl-Anthony Towns or Noah Vonleh, the Timberwolves are allowing under 97 points per 100 possessions with Layman at the four. And so when he comes back, if the Timberwolves are going to make good on this apparent playoff push they're in right now, I think he's going to be just an understatedly huge part of that.
Yeah, that I like that one a lot. Can I give you, I have a two for one, and this is, I'm going to call this my mea culpa section, where I admit to just being very wrong in my preseason or my offseason analysis. And I know you're going to disagree with the first one. So I just want to say, I'm not ready to say that this guy's contract is a good contract, that the signing was good, but I think it was universally regarded as the worst of the offseason, and it's Terry Rozier. And so I started writing this up, and he was going to be in my worst, no question. And I was like, well, I better look at the numbers and just make sure that he hasn't done something that I somehow missed. There are four players averaging 17, 4, and 4 and shooting 40% from deep. And Rozier is one of them. He's the only guard. Karl-Anthony Towns, Brandon Ingram, and Gordon Hayward, obviously small sample for Hayward, are the other three guys. Now, Rozier has not been a good defender this year. That was supposed to be like maybe one of the reasons the signing was not terrible. So it's weird that he's kind of flipped that. He's been fairly efficient. He doesn't really work with Devontae Graham, but nobody saw Graham coming. So I don't know how you can kind of hold that against Rozier or against the Hornets. But I was stunned to sort of look at Rozier's deal with fresh eyes and think like, that's not great, but it's definitely not. I don't think it's the worst. I don't think it's close to the worst. And I was kind of shocked to find that out. The other one is much less severe. It's Ricky Rubio. I didn't think that that was a great signing for the Suns for a lot of reasons. His inability to shoot, taking the ball out of Booker's hands, but the defense he's brought, the stability, you know, obviously the Suns have fallen off, but he was a key to their hot start, their improved defense. The fit was way better than I thought. So those are my two that I was really wrong on. And I think it's fair to acknowledge that at least those are like not awful signings at this point.
My mea culpa for Ricky Rubio is the fact that I just didn't include him in any part of this list because I thought it was one of the worst signs. I didn't think it was the worst. I know it was voted the worst move, or maybe it was right behind the Knicks. The Knicks offseason was the worst move in the league, which hard to disagree with. I was very low on that. But
yeah.
So that's my mea culpa there. Rozier, I definitely disagree with you on. And so I'll get to him a little bit later since he's clearly in my other section. To wrap up my tier three, though, I have Kelly Oubre Jr. And his was tough just because it's 2 years, $30 million, and so it's relatively short term, and it's not like the cheapest deal. But I like that because we're not dealing with player options here, which kind of populate my tier fours that we're going to get into is, oh, I wish these contracts were a little, for team-friendly purposes, could they have been a little bit longer so that you have them under lock and key and don't have to worry about their raises coming. But for Oubre, the fact that he's making this money, you're still going to have the ability to keep him. And that he's at this price point, it makes it easier to plan your future around having him there because his raise is not going to be demonstrably higher from what he's making now. And then just what he's doing on the court. Career high, 20.1 points per 36 minutes. Personal best true shooting percentage. He's shooting 40% on pull-up threes. I believe he's 5 of 12, and he's shooting 34.1% from three overall, which is kind of a big deal. He's hitting 55.6% of his pull-up jumpers inside the arc. Oh, excuse me, 54.2%. I did not change the date that I had thrown in there. And he's up to 50% on his pull-up threes, in case you care. So that's big. But he's also just... he's had some big moments for them. The better spacing has helped him get to the rim more often than ever. And he just seems like more of an across the board scoring threat. He's thriving in transition. He's serviceable running some pick and rolls. And then I've noticed from what I've seen with the Suns, and Phoenix fans can obviously feel free to disagree since they've watched him more clearly, under Monty Williams, it just seems like he's moving more without the ball. And that's going to help any player. And so if he ever sniffs league average from three, he instantly becomes like one of the better, more versatile scoring forwards in the game.
Yeah, I think he wasn't on my list, but I definitely, in looking over it, I was like, that's a pretty good deal just because the player Kelly Oubre is getting much more close to the idea of the player Kelly Oubre could be with Washington, for example, where, you know, he's a rangy forward that you could get away with at the four a little bit and you sort of get away with the threes. He moves well if he could hit three. So all that, I echo everything you say. He's just kind of a quality player at a reasonable cost, at an age too, where like, if he's a part of your future, great. You can lock him down in a year or two. And if he's someone you want to trade, like, you know, $15 million annual salary is going to return something interesting, I think. So it works kind of both ways for him. The other guy, it's not quite like Oubre, but the one that jumped out to me as a forward is Rodney Hood.
Overlap.
Oh, we got overlap. Great. So basically Hood is just shooting the shit out of the ball, which is what the difference so far. I think he's like 49.3 from deep, which will obviously come down. And I guess if you wanted to be critical, you could say that changing from the types of wings that Portland used to have to the ones they have now is part of the problem and part of the reason the team has been disappointing. But it's hard to really pin any of that on Hood, considering that he shot so well and that he's, what, 2 for $12 million with a player option that I got to believe he's going to opt out of. But that's such a good value for someone that, you know, can be that third scorer if you need him to be.
Yeah, I had him too. So he was in my tier four, and this was like a contract that you wish was a little bit longer because you look at him, 2 years, $11.7 million is great. They got him for the mini MLE, but he has a player option for next year, which if he plays like this, he's almost certainly going to decline. And I think you're only going to have early bird rights on him at this point, if I'm not mistaken. And when you're Portland and you have so much equity in guards already with CJ McCollum, Damian Lillard, and hey, newsflash, like Anfernee Simons is going to be extension eligible after next year. And so like that has to be part of your long-term calculus. That kind of blows for them. But right now he's just, relative to his pay grade, he's been incredible. His catch and shoot effective field goal percentage is 78. And he's still getting like those pull-up jumper looks. He's shooting 54% on pull-up twos and 38.1% on pull-up threes. He's just been an absolute monster. He can't do defensively what they need him to do, which is guard those bigger wings, but he's just been outstanding. And again, this isn't someone who's just been feasting off of like these passes from McCollum or Damian Lillard. He's getting those pull-up jumper touches. He's in the 99th percentile of isolation efficiency right now, and those account for about 12% of his possessions. He's just been you hit on it too, and I'm stepping on your point. He's just been absolutely fantastic. That was a great move by Portland in a summer where they didn't make too many.
Yeah, and another one where I was ready to put him maybe in the other category just because Portland's been so bad, but then scrutinizing the numbers, it's like there's no way this isn't a great offseason signing. I got one more that I like, and I don't know if it's fair to count it because it's a sign and trade, but it's Brogdon with the Pacers. It like I don't know if it's like intellectually honest to not factor in that Indy gave up some picks, a first and a couple seconds to make this happen, because that should sort of, so I don't know, factor into the value calculus somewhere, but it's a straight four for 85 million, no options. And basically he's just increased his usage and taken on a bigger role and had some efficiency dips. But like, if you're a 50, 40, 90 guy and you up your role, that's just going to happen. And he's a huge reason that the Pacers without Victor Oladipo, I do this every year. I always think the Pacers are going to be worse than they are, but he's a huge reason that they've been really good. And I think when Oladipo comes back, you have to think about them as like a sure playoff team that could be as good as the fourth best team in the conference, probably not any worse than sixth. It's so rare that you get a guy that seems like just a clear role player with limitations on a very good team. You put him into a larger role on a team that's a little worse and he thrives. You know, the Pacers are plus 9.5 with him on per 100, minus 0.4 with him off. You know, every number really validates that a guy for, you know, 21 million and change a year, he's much more than a quality starter. So the value there, I think, is really significant.
Yeah, I think the deal was panned, and there are certain elements that are worrisome right now. His 3-point percentage is down, but you look at the types of looks he's taking. Those are tough looks.
Right.
His job should get easier. He should be able to even reach the rim a little bit more when he's playing off the ball with Victor Oladipo back. And so the fact that he's performed as well as he has and that he's that important to the Pacers, and he's averaging nearly 8 assists per game, he was like in double digits for the first 10 games or whatever of the season in assists. That was wild. So I don't know that I would call that a great value, but I do think it's a deal that's a lot more likable than it was a couple months ago.
Yeah, I think for me, a lot of the ones that tended to fall into my good categories were ones that I didn't like at the time and have since been proven wrong, just because, you know, the sort of your baseline for expectations was at point A, and point B is so much better than that, that it makes it seem objectively good. I think that's a fair point that there are concerns, but I'm just impressed by, you know, what he's been. And look, if you're the Bucks and you're watching this and you also signed Chris Middleton for $178 million, you got to be thinking about your allocation of resources pretty seriously right now.
My last best contract in tier four was Jermichael Green. Just another situation where, for the Clippers' sake, you wish it was a little bit longer. 2 years, $9.8 million. You could argue that he gets moved up a tier because maybe there's a chance he picks up that player option, just because teams aren't going to overpay for reserve bigs, really, particularly when there's not a lot of cap space going around next year. But you have to imagine he could probably get regular mid-level money if he wanted to. He did accept less, though, to stay with the Clippers, so you never know. Just solid. I mean, he's important to a bench that's second in point differential per 100 possessions, and it doesn't really matter which big he plays with. The Clippers are destroying opponents when he plays with Montrezl Harrell. They're outscoring them by 10.9 points per 100 possessions. And when those two play without Mo Harkless on the floor, the Clippers are plus 20.1 points per 100 possessions. And his 3-point shooting over 38% from beyond the arc is just big for a team that's probably underachieved, I think, from beyond the arc. When you look at how Kawhi's been shooting, Lou Williams was slumping to start the year. They're shooting 36% as a team, but that's only 14th in the league. So to have just that beyond the arc outlet in the front court is fairly big time, and just one of those rock solid players. So to get him on that type of value when he probably could have gotten more on the market was a big deal to continuing to propping up a value in what has been probably the second best bench in the NBA behind Dallas's.
Yeah, he's a good one. And I think you can't discount the fact that, you know, that I think Harrell has been so good that there's a great chance he closes a lot of games. Zubats, I doubt, will close any meaningful games for them. But if you want to go five out, Green gets you there. If you want to play him at the five against the right matchups in a meaningful playoff series, I think you can get away with that. So just in terms of where the Clippers want to go, his value is even higher.
Yeah, and they have not really gone to that yet this year, but
no.
It was pivotal to them remaining competitive, with the Warriors in that first round matchup last year. Like, the Clippers were actually really good statistically when Jermichael Green was at the five. I don't think it works against all sorts of teams, but if you're going to go against teams that maybe have flimsier bigs, or they're not going to run out a true big. They're going to play some smaller lineups. Green at the five becomes a potential cheat code. That'll do it for our best contracts from 2019 free agency. Again, be sure to follow Grant on Twitter at @GT_Hughes. He's going to come back on in the coming days to talk about the worst contracts. So be on the lookout for that. Just as a quick reminder, continue rating, reviewing, subscribing to us on iTunes, subscribe to us on YouTube, follow us all on Twitter. You have those at the beginning of the pod. Until next time, I leave you with a shout out to Kyle Anderson, and I can't believe I'm saying this, and finally relenting, because there's a shirt that you can purchase with it. Shout out to Beto Udrih.